From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. It's spring break, which to us means one thing.
Wet sport coat contest. Whoa!
All right, two things, I guess. It also means here at Wait, Wait, we get to take a little break, and we get a chance to bring you some of the things we enjoyed most over the last year.
It's hard to remember, but it used to be really warm, and one of those warm nights we went to Tanglewood in Lenox, Massachusetts, and interviewed one of the superstars of classical music.
And sure, Emmanuel Ax is one of the most brilliant classical pianists in the world, with hundreds of recordings, thousands of concerts, but we asked him about the important stuff.
Let's just go right to the important thing. Emmanuel Ax is the coolest, most macho name in classical music.
It is a little strange.
It's pretty good.
I had nothing to do with it.
Because, you know, we're going to go talk to Emmanuel Ax, and they were like, what is that, a metal band?
There are a lot of jokes, obviously.
Really?
Oh, many, many.
Do you know any better ones than that? Because that was pretty lame.
Well, there's the old standby, I'm not an automatic ax, I'm a manual ax.
Oh. Oh. Hey! Oh,
hey!
Oh. Hey!
That's good.
One of my favorites was, I play quite often with my friend Yo-Yo Ma.
Yeah.
And there's a wonderful German violinist, and people had the idea of putting together the Lizzie Borden trio, because her name is Anne Sophie Mutter, so it would be the Ax Ma Mutter trio.
Whoa! Well done. That may be the most public radio joke ever.
Bam!
Ladies and gentlemen, the comedy stylings of Emmanuel Ax. So let's do some history. You grew up in Poland, behind the Iron Curtain, as we used to call it.
Right.
And your family got out when you were about 10?
Exactly.
And what was the first thing you did when you got out to freedom?
Well, to be perfectly honest, the first great memory I have is we went Warsaw, Paris, Paris, Montreal, Montreal, Winnipeg.
Wait a minute. So you're living in communist Poland, which I imagine a gray and dreary place, and then you go to Paris, and you're like, freedom, the West! Well, and then they make you go to Winnipeg.
Well,
that's like a cruel joke.
All we saw, actually, was the Paris airport.
Right.
At the time was Orly.
Yeah.
But the thing I remember is my first plate ever of French fries.
Really?
Aww.
And that was very special.
Really?
Yes. That was amazing.
You had never had French fries before? I hope you said, what a country. So you ended up at Juilliard as a young man, right?
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah. And so you were one of those child prodigies?
No, not at all. No, I was just a normal piano student.
Really?
Pretty much, yeah.
Normal piano students tend not to end up at Juilliard has been my experience.
Well, maybe normal for Juilliard.
Oh, I see.
I mean, but you know, there were people around me always who were so incredibly brilliant and gifted that I always sort of felt middle of the road.
Really?
Yeah.
And one of them was Yo-Yo Ma, right? He was there.
One of them was Yo-Yo. Yeah.
Right.
We met at school.
Really?
Yeah.
How did you meet?
We met at the Juilliard cafeteria. We were both eating.
Were you?
Yes.
How unusual. Is it true you made your first forays into the world of classical music through piano competitions?
Well, competitions are one way to sort of get noticed and get some concerts.
Well, basically. I know that you keep hearing about, you know, people who win, say, the Van Cliburn or whatever it may be, and all of a sudden their career is launched, they have recording contracts, they're playing with orchestras. So I imagine they're very competitive.
The competitions are competitive.
That's why they call them that.
Yeah. But actually, I will say though,
I was an English major. I will say though
that they're actually. I think competition in any kind of activity like music, art, literature, anything that's not done with a timer is actually impossible.
Right.
I mean, so in effect, what you're doing is you're entering a lottery.
Right.
You're hoping that you play well, you play your best on the day that you're heard, and you're hoping that the people who are judging will like what you do.
But don't you also hope that the others do badly?
As you say, it's competition. It's actually maybe not the best word. You could call it maybe, I don't know, the lottery festival.
The lottery festival.
Something, you know, something like that.
The Hunger Game.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yes. It would be more exciting if they made you fight. It wouldn't last very long. You just have a bunch of guys going, not the hands, not the hands. One last question. You're a classical pianist. You've spent your life as a classical pianist. Do you and your colleagues think the word pianist is as funny as we do?
Actually, I often say piano player.
Really? Because you just don't even want to get within striking distance of saying that one wrong.
Yeah.
Well, Emmanuel Axe, you've been on this stage many times, but this time you're here to play a game we're calling...
You Make Men Irresistible to Women.
Oh, no, wait. That's not Emmanuel Axe. That's Axe Body Spray. I got confused. Woo! We're going to ask you three questions about the ubiquitous Axe body spray. Get two questions right. You'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their voicemail. Carl, who is Emmanuel Axe playing for?
Emmanuel is playing for Colette Dill of Springfield, Massachusetts.
Yes. Here we go. You ready to play?
I'm all set.
Oh, I can tell. At a meeting at the London ad agency that handled Axe in 2006, they came up with a killer idea in their ads. A woman, very attractive, would smell a guy who was wearing Axe and then say what? A, goodness, I would like to mate with you this very moment. B, hey, did something sexy die in here? Or C, Mr. Axe, please, this is Tanglewood, behave yourself. Or C, bum chicka chicka wow wow.
I would love it to be B.
You would.
It would be marvelous. I'm going to go for B.
You're going to go for B.
I'm going to go for B.
Did something sexy die in here? I wish it was too, but it was actually bomb chicka wow wow. The idea is a woman comes across a young man wearing Axe and immediately says bomb chicka wow wow and starts gyrating. All right. Very good. Still have two more chances here.
Okay.
Axe body spray is strong stuff. There can be consequences to its use. As in which of these cases? A, at a Connecticut high school in 2012, so many teenage boys wore Axe body spray, it created a toxic cloud that triggered the fire alarm. B, in 2010, a woman who tried to use it as bug spray in a pinch discovered it actually makes mosquitoes stronger. Or C, in certain cases, it turns out it melts your skin off.
Wow. Do I get a hint? I don't get a hint, do I?
Well?
It's A, B, or C.
It is A, B, or C.
And wait, Manny, boys do love to wear it. It's crazy. Like, 14-year-old boys go crazy with this stuff.
Yeah, but a toxic cloud? I think I'm being urged toward A.
I believe you are being urged towards A.
A.
A. A. A. It's A.
It's A.
Yes. A toxic cloud.
Thank you.
There you go. Last question. This is very exciting. Despite its reputation Axe body spray has inspired acts of public service, as in which of these incidents? A, at a Dungeons and Dragons convention, a man with a bandolier filled with cans of Axe wandered around offering it to particularly stinky players. B, a public-minded citizen in Cleveland discovered it's the perfect chemical to remove graffiti from city landmarks. C, an anonymous philanthropist provides cans of Axe free of charge to the Arena Football League to use as smelling salts.
Oh.
That's tough. You know, that they all sound plausible.
Yes, well, that's the problem. Yeah.
I'm going to go for A.
You're going to go for A. You're right!
Hey!
Yes!
Right.
Thank you. Thank you. It was the D&D convention. I don't know how the guys felt when some guy walked up with a bandolier of Axe body spray and said, here, try this, my friend. Carl, how did Emmanuel Axe do in our quiz?
He had two correct answers, Peter. That's good enough to win for Colette Dill.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Emmanuel Axe is a multi-Grammy-winning pianist. Emmanuel Axe, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. So this week, we're taking some time to stop and contemplate how much we love doing what we do. It's called being in the moment.
Or taking the week off.
A short while ago, we decided to do something bold, something really unusual for public radio, something that could radically redefine what NPR is capable of.
And then we said, nah, let's just interview Doris Kearns Goodwin again.
Ms. Goodwin joined us in January and talked to us about her lifelong interest in getting up close and personal with commanders-in-chief.
One thing I found out about you, I knew obviously that you wrote about presidents very well and very successfully. I did not know that you once worked for a president. That's in fact almost how you got your start. It was LBJ, right?
No question. I mean, I was chosen as a White House fellow when I was in my early 20s. And unfortunately, after a dance in the White House to celebrate the White House fellowship, it turned out I had written an article against LBJ while I was involved in the anti-Vietnam War movement. He dances with me in the White House, whispers that he wants me to be assigned directly to him in the White House, but it was not to be that simple. For 2 days later comes this article I had previously written that was talking about the need for somebody to get rid of LBJ because of the anti-Vietnam feeling that I had. But somehow, surprisingly, he said, oh, bring her down here for a year, and if I can't win her over, no one can. So that was the beginning of my fascination with the presidency, this character, LBJ.
Really? And did he win you over to his side?
Not on Vietnam, but I certainly came to feel more empathy for him as a person. I don't think I've ever met anybody as interesting as LBJ. I mean, who else, when they're in the middle of going to the bathroom, which had you come in and talk to them in the middle of it all?
Now, wait a minute. We had heard that story about LBJ, that he would actually, in the middle of a conversation, often with the press, just walk into the bathroom, lower his pants, do his business while continuing the conversation. Did he do that with you?
Yes. I mean,
no.
I was a staff member. It's fine. I just didn't get embarrassed. I just kept talking. I didn't really look a lot, but I talked.
That was probably the best way to handle that.
Right.
The not looking a lot part.
Yeah. You went on, you've known primarily, you won the Pulitzer Prize for your book about Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Eleanor Roosevelt. Of course, your book about Lincoln, Team of Rivals, was a huge bestseller, inspired the movie. Your new book is about Teddy Roosevelt, a huge, colorful figure. Aren't you cheating by just writing about the interesting ones?
Yeah, I suppose so. But you know what? When it takes me so long as it does to write these books, it took me longer to write about FDR and Eleanor in World War II than the war took to be fought. It took me 10 years to write about Abraham Lincoln, 7 about Teddy and Taft. You got to want to wake up with that person in the morning. So who are the most interesting presidents that most people want to write about? It's these guys. So that means you have to come up with some angle, if you can, that's a little different, which is why I ended up with the cabinet of Lincoln or Teddy and Taft's friendship instead of just Teddy. But it's worth it to be able to wake up and love these guys. I could never write about Hitler and Stalin. I'd never want to wake up with them in the morning or certainly go to sleep with them at night.
Have you ever, gotten into a subject and realized, oh, my God, this is dull, or I hate these people?
If I do, I stop, because you can't go on. I mean, I was going to write about Pamela Harriman, a very interesting woman, but in the end I realized I wanted to write about somebody who had exercised power in her own right, and so I ended up not doing that book. I was going to write about Nelson Rockefeller once, because somebody gave me the great opening scene, as you may know. That
I have a great closing scene, if that's what you mean.
That's what I mean.
Yes. Yeah. I should say, just to, for people who don't know this, Nelson Rockefeller, the vice president and governor of New York, died, I believe, the phrase...
In the saddle.
In flagrante delicto.
Yes.
Miss Delicto was his secretary at the time, I think.
But he was at his desk.
No, I think what happened is, when they realized what had happened, that he died in bed, the woman who was with him brought her friend over, and they seated him in a chair as if he were reading the Wall Street Journal. But the story that I heard was that the cop came in and knew that something was wrong because his left shoe was on his right foot and vice versa, because they were so nervous.
Really? So you're saying...
That was in the opening of my book, but I decided I didn't know where to go after that, and I don't know how much of that was true, but it was a great story.
When you're focused on a book, like you, I assume for the last 7 years you were with this book about Roosevelt and Taft, but do you get so focused that you can't stop focusing on it? When people say, Doris, would you like some lunch? You say, you know who ate lunch? Teddy Roosevelt ate lunch.
I think you do, actually. I think that's what happens. You think about these people. I mean, I you know, every time I saw somebody who was heavy, I think about William Howard Taft and wishing that he could stay on his diet. He had sort of like a Pritikin diet, and he was able to lose from 350 to 280 when he was happy, and then when he was sad, he went up to 350.
Oh, my God. Wow. Are you telling me? I wanted to ask you about this, because your book is about Roosevelt and Taft, but as you say, we know a lot about Teddy Roosevelt. He's on Mount Rushmore. He's famous. Taft, all we know about him, all I knew about him, was that he had to have a custom-made bathtub in the White House because he was too big.
And that is true. I mean, he could fit four workmen into the bathtub, but I'm telling you what, he was a really decent guy, and there's more to him.
But you finished this book. It was a labor of 7 years. It's out now. I mean, don't you want a break? Don't you want to write, I don't know, like a Shakira fan biography, say?
I already did that.
But
so
you wrote a baseball book and a novel, and right?
Well, the baseball book was the one book that was the short book, thank God.
Wait till next year.
It was about growing up in love with the Brooklyn Dodgers and my father having taught me how to keep score when I was a little girl, so that I could record for him the history of that afternoon's Brooklyn Dodger game. And I really did love doing that. I didn't have to do tons of research. It was memory. It was my childhood. And it brought my parents back to life. You know, instead of bringing these big old presidents back to life, my parents died when I was young. So it probably meant a lot more to me than all these other ones put together.
Wow.
I love that book.
So I have to ask, Doris Kearns Goodwin, how about them socks?
Oh, it was the best summer of my life.
Oh.
It was so awesome. I mean, just, you know, I promised myself as the summer was going along, because I was finishing this book, and I couldn't even be on television talking about the news because I wasn't even following it. The only thing I did was read the sports pages every day, and every day it seemed the Red Sox won. So I kept telling myself, I don't care if they win the World Series. I don't care what happens in the playoffs. They've made me happy so long. But then, of course, they won the World Series, and I was at every playoff game and every World Series game. Oh. I even wore a beard one of the days.
Did you really? And speaking as an esteemed historian, a Pulitzer Prize winning historian, do in fact, in your scholarly opinion, the Yankees suck?
Without a question.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, Doris Kearns Goodwin, we've invited you here to play a game we're calling
To Heck with Dead Presidents. These are the presidents of the future.
So you're an expert in the presidents of the past, but what about the presidents of the future? We're going to ask you about three presidents yet to be, taken from science fiction movies and books. If you answer two questions correctly, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answer machine, voicemail, whatever device they may have. Carl, who is historian Doris Kearns Goodwin playing for?
Doris is playing for Julie Watson of Cooper City, Florida.
All right. You ready to play?
Julie, you're in trouble. I can tell already.
No, that's going to be great. In a book by author Mark Winsland, President Frazier Bush takes office in 2505. What's notable about President Frazier Bush? A, he takes over for President Keith Richards, who lived a surprisingly long time, given everything we know about him. B, he's the 27th member of the Bush family to hold the office. Or C, in 2558, robot Doris Kearns Goodwin writes a best-selling biography of him.
I will say he's the 27th member of the Bush family.
You're right. He is.
Hooray!
In this book, Novel of a Dystopian Future. Mr. President Fraser Bush leaves office when he is executed for collaborating with Al-Qaeda. In the book, The Accidental Time Machine, President Billy Cabot oversees the one-year war in the year 2180, which begins when what happens? A, the second coming of Jesus Christ happens in the Oval Office, Jesus appears. B, a nationwide shortage of maple syrup inspires a surprise invasion of Canada. Or C, President Cabot pushes the wrong button when ordering lunch and instead launches a nuclear weapon at Bermuda.
Well, C is the most fun, so I'll choose C.
No, I'm afraid it is actually the second coming of Jesus.
Maple syrup?
No. Jesus comes back in the Oval Office. Turns out Jesus not nearly as much of a pacifist as we've been led to believe, and has the president start a war. Okay.
Oh.
You have now one more chance to win. Comes down to this. We will go to a classic. It is the Simpsons movie. In the Simpsons movie, Itchy, the homicidal mouse from the Itchy and Scratchy cartoon show in the Simpsons, Itchy gets elected president. Who does Itchy choose as his running mate? A, Dick Cheney, because he wants someone, quote, with the same thirst for blood as I have. B, Homer Simpson, who campaigns under the slogan, "Yes, we do." Or C, Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Well, I don't think Hillary's funny, so I'd have to say Cheney thirst for blood.
That would be funnier. I'm afraid it was, in fact, Hillary Rodham Clinton.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, my poor, I knew that poor person was not going to be happy
no.
with me.
Carl, how did Doris Kearns Goodwin?
She had one correct answer, Peter, but not enough to win for Julie Watson.
Doris Kearns Goodwin's new book, The Bully Pulpit, about Teddy Roosevelt and his relationship with William Howard Taft, is out now. Doris Kearns Goodwin, thank you so much for joining us. What a pleasure to talk to you. Take care, Doris. Now, a lot of people say that our show is a useless waste of time. And we object to that strongly.
Yeah, take it back, Totenberg.
We're not entirely useless. Often our show presents helpful hints on how to live your life to the fullest. For example, this Bluff the Listener game from last year with guest judge and scorekeeper Bill Curtis.
Hi, it's Megan Tripp in Orlando.
Hey, Megan, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. What are you doing in Orlando?
I'm a technical communicator.
What is that exactly?
I work for a software company,
yeah.
So I explain what it does and how to use it.
Oh, I see. So are you basically like an IT person, a help desk person? I call up and I say, I can't make the Fliz job do the face push. And you're like, oh, what you do is you press here.
No, but if you press the computer, it would come up with an article explaining all about face push.
Okay.
Dangerous era.
Face push is already hashtagging.
I know.
It's totally trending.
Megan, welcome to the show. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is Megan's topic?
Please, I'm not that kind of girl.
If you're a human female, you've put up with a lot of unwanted attention from guys. This week we read about a great new way to stop people from hitting on you. Our panelists are going to tell you about it. Guess the real creep deterrent. You'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Sure.
First, let's hear from Alonzo Bowden.
Ladies, are you single? Do you want to stay that way? Do you just want to be left alone tonight? Unmatch.com is here to help you. The service works because everybody does the same thing when they meet an attractive person. They look them up online. If you've hired Unmatch.com, you're sure the person looking you up will immediately want to look away. Unmatch creates an entire online existence for you, carefully created to drive away the most ardent suitor. Apparently, complaints about your landlord not allowing 15 cats or taking a break from your four kids under 5 years old will slow any guy down. Any man that Googles you will come up with a planted news story about you, your bankruptcy, pending house arrest, or your obsessed ex who just got out of jail. Unmatch agrees there's no guarantee, but their service is like a car alarm. It won't guarantee security, but the thief would rather go after something that's not shrieking a warning signal.
Unmatch.com, which creates an online profile for you that will drive anyone away. Your next story of a new way to tell people you're not interested comes from Paula Poundstone.
Some men don't always know when women would like to be approached, and women don't always know how to politely decline advances, which leaves a nice, juicy business opportunity for the makers of Thank You, Not Now, the truly foul-smelling atomizer. It's a simple device with a three-button handheld component, each releasing a different repulsive smell, sold separately, including, what have you been eating? How many head of cattle do you own? How many head of cattle do you have with you? And what in the hell did you roll in? Women love being able to put off the common clumsy, are you ladies alone? With a quick fss and a, whoa, you know what? I'm sorry, I can see you're busy. It's available online at reallystinkystuffthatmakespeoplegoaway.com and at Bed Bath & Beyond in the Beyond.
Thank You, Not Now, the atomizer of scents sure to drive anyone away. Your last story of an unusual way to stay single comes from Jesse Klein.
Whether a woman's relaxing at the beach, shopping at the supermarket, or even recovering in the ICU, there's always a sketchy guy trying to talk to her about how awesome it would be to have sex with him. Thankfully, there is breaking news out of China this week that someone may have solved the problem. Women who really want to be left alone are now wearing what are described as, quote, anti-pervert leg hair stockings, which create the illusion of the wearer having hairy legs. And we're not just talking slightly unshaven hairy legs. We're talking thick, curly, male black hair. This is Saddam Hussein as he just came out of the spider hole hair. Burt Reynolds lying on a bear rug. Hairy legs. Worn with a skirt or even under a bathing suit, the stockings are guaranteed to ward off or even sicken most potential harassers. Sadly, what the maker of the stockings has not considered is the fact that no matter what weird thing a woman does with her body, there will always be an even weirder man who digs it.
One of these was something we found designed to help women avoid unwanted attention. From Alonzo Bowden, it is at a web service called Unmatch.com that creates a terrible online profile for you. From Paula Poundstone, a handheld atomizer that can spray any one of three unpleasant scents to drive anyone away. Or from Jesse Klein, stockings that make your legs look disgustingly hairy so as to avoid unwanted male attention. Which of these are the real device or service meant to keep unwanted suitors away?
I'll go with the hair stocking.
You're going to go with the hair stocking. All right. All right, your choice then is Jesse's story. Well, we spoke to somebody who had an opinion about this real story.
If I could wear hairy leg stockings to make my bodega man stop winking at me, I would wear hair stockings.
That was Colette McIntyre of the feminist blog The Jane Doe talking how much she would like to get a pair of those Chinese hairy pantyhose. You were correct. Jesse had the right story, the real one. That means you've earned a point for Jesse just for being truthful, and you have won our game. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home voicemail. Well done.
Thanks.
Thank you.
To be sure, did I shave my legs for this?
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. If you've heard our show before, you know we don't strive to any great achievements. But we've done what we can for the limerick arts.
People love my impressions of Lilo and ScarJo.
Well, This week, we're going to try to make a little difference. Here are some instances of our panelists helping you live your best life ever.
How you like me now, Oprah?
Amy, a new study by the London School of Economics says there's one activity that makes us so unhappy, the only thing we rank worse than it is being physically ill. What is it?
Is it done in the home?
No, specifically. Well, sometimes. Some people do it in the home. I'll give you a hint. It's like, hi-ho, hi-ho.
Working.
Oh, crap. Yes, working.
Oh, working at
working
home?
Is the word. No, working in general is the worst thing ever. The researchers...
But wait!
Yeah, it's been proved. Researchers sent questions to thousands of subjects at random times of the day via a smartphone app, and they asked what they were doing and how they felt. The people who answered at work reported being more miserable than everybody, except for the people who answered currently vomiting.
So wait a minute. But there were people working at home or people just working?
People just working. If they say,
Peter, again, I...
Take it away, Paula.
I'd like to know how they did the study.
Why just explain?
Okay, yeah, but to whom did they send the question?
Apparently they sent it to an appreciatively random enough group of people they could get a good response.
No. Are you working right now?
I am.
Is it a step away from vomiting?
I'd have to vomit and see which I prefer. Maz, a designer from Latvia, has come up with an invention that promises to change the world or at least make some of it cleaner and more efficient. What is it?
Vacuum.
No, although a vacuum would be a fine thing. Combination of two things.
Combination of two things.
Very common.
Very rarely. I
know.
For starters, there's a soap dispenser next to the flush handle.
Oh, it's a toilet flushing thing that flushes. It's a toilet flusher, obviously. You said a flush handle.
Yes.
And there's a dispenser.
Right? Yeah, that's basically what I said. You just said back to me. But what does?
No, I'm just making sure we're on the same page.
It has those things.
You know, I actually know the answer to this, and it's something I thought guys did anyway, so I didn't know this was an invention.
What, pee on the handle?
It's a urinal sink.
That's exactly what it is.
What?
It's a combination urinal sink.
I thought you guys did that anyway. I don't know.
What? You thought we
bars.
Did what anyway?
I thought you peed
in the
sink.
No, here's the thing. The problem is that men, as you may know, tend not to wash their hands after doing their business with the urinal, right? And this is because sinks are located sometimes as much as 7 or 8 feet from the urinal, and it's easier to just wipe your hands on the front of your pants as you come out of the bathroom so it looks like you washed your hands. So designer Kasper Jørsens has come up with a modern solution. It's a urinal with a built-in tap. So it automatically turns on when you finished adding to the urinal. It turns on and you can just reach out and wash your hands.
Now you're going to tell me that a guy who invents a urinal / sink isn't happy in his work?
Paula, according to a new American health study,
yes.
You can cheer yourself up and ward off cravings for junk food simply by doing what?
Don't just tell me. Just give me a hint and I'll get it.
Instead of calling Domino's, get out your sketchbook.
Oh, you can draw a picture of the food?
Yes, you can draw a pizza. Apparently, if
that's
if you
ridiculous! What the hell do you do all week? I've heard you answer people before about how you write the show, how you research, and you find news stories, and then you put it. But you didn't do that this week, did you?
We do like to look for stories that will set you off. Paula.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. What is it? This is one about peeing on the pizza. What is this? What the hell is this?
You don't
just draw a picture of pizza and then you're satisfied.
Apparently, you can because
no, you can't.
Here's the idea.
Yeah.
So everybody knows that it's really funny. You're like feeling a little peckish, you're a little bored. Oh, I'm going to order the pizza. You order the pizza. You eat the pizza. It's a lot of pleasure, but then there's a lot of regret afterwards.
Absolutely.
You feel full, right?
Yeah.
So what they did was they had people who wanted a pizza just draw the pizza, and apparently just visualizing the pizza enough to draw it released all these endorphins and pleasure centers in the brain, so they actually were happy and didn't want the pizza anymore.
Where did they get the people? Who did they?
The same people who are... unhappy at work.
So you know what it was?
What was it,
Paul? Okay. sometimes the late night staff at a pizza place, they don't have enough people. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. So they're like, you know, they have to say stuff like, yeah, we'll deliver it, but it's going to be 2 hours, you know? Right. And so finally there's just some guy who'll go, you know what, draw it.
Just draw. I'm not going to get there in time. Draw the damn thing.
Yeah, just draw it and then call me back. Tell me how it went. I'm doing a study for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Man, when I learn how to draw a Butterfinger, I'm going to drop some pounds.
In February of this year, we went to Phoenix and made an amazing discovery. It turns out that the state of Arizona has two United States senators.
John McCain and that young guy next to John McCain.
We spoke to Senator Jeff Flake, who began his appearance on our show with a shocking admission.
Thank you for having me on.
I have to say, I was worried that you wouldn't be here by the time we got to this point of the show.
So was I.
Yeah.
But I figure if an NFL player can come out as gay, a Republican senator can come out as an NPR listener.
Nice. But what about in the locker room? We're not going to feel comfortable.
Yeah, no, man. I just want to say, I don't feel comfortable undressing with a Republican, so... A joke.
What goes on in the cloakroom stays.
Yeah, okay. So, let's just establish your credentials. You are from Snowflake, Arizona, I've been told, right?
That is true.
Right. And it's Jeff Flake from Snowflake.
And you can believe it or not, I grew up not knowing that flake was a term of disparagement.
Really?
It was a safe haven for flakes.
Really? So you didn't know. When did someone call you a flake and you realized they were trying to insult you?
You know, the truth is, after college, I went to Washington, D.C. for an internship, and I was at a reception, and it came up in conversation with someone that I was from Snowflake. He didn't know my name was Flake. This guy knew somebody from Snowflake. He just couldn't pull up the name. So he struggled for a while, and I thought, I'll narrow it down for him. I said, was this guy a flake? It's an innocent question. He said, nah, he seemed perfectly normal to me. It was then that I knew I'm in for a long, long life.
I understand. You've had a long political career because, of course, you represented Arizona in the Congress before being elected to the Senate. Has the name ever been, has it been ever used as an attack ad, for example, by an opponent?
Well, my first campaign theme was simply another flake for Congress that seemed appropriate. But
so you
as a joke.
Co-opted the humor.
Well, you know, in Arizona, believe it or not, I mean, there are a lot of flakes. I have...
Which one
my
do
name?
You mean?
Well, Snowflake was actually named after my great-great-grandfather, William Jordan Flake, who founded the town. Erastus Snow came later, and they called it Snowflake.
They got along, okay.
No, but, you know, there are a lot of flakes, and so, in fact, we have five children. I am one of 11. I have 10 siblings. I have 69 first cousins on my father's side alone.
Good Lord.
So when they say that Congress's popularity is down to blood relatives, I'm going to ride that popularity wave for a long time.
and you know what they say? They say, no two flakes are alike.
That's true. Yeah. So you're the junior senator from Arizona. Remind me, who's the senior senator? I can't quite think of him.
John somebody.
John somebody. Is it? He gets a lot of press. John McCain. He appeared in this show, of course, many years ago, and he's always on the Sunday shows. He's always in the news. Do you ever feel a little jealous that everybody's like always running over to talk to him?
Bugs the heck out of me.
Really, does it?
No, it comes with the territory. Right. I feel honored to serve with him, and he's been there a while and done a lot of good things, and. It's good to be where I am.
It's funny because the official term is junior senator.
That's right.
Right. So does that mean that you have to like bring the snacks to the cloakroom or the rookie hazings or something like that?
Sure. That's just every junior senator is just one step away from their lifelong dream being senior senator.
Right.
John's not one to take a hint though.
No.
Now, the one thing you like to do, Senator, is you like to go to remote desert islands and try to survive. Is that right?
I do.
Yeah.
like Castaway?
Pretty much. Could you describe one of these expeditions? You've done this a number of times now, right?
A couple of times. 5 years ago, I went by myself. I like to read adventure books, and especially Sailing Adventures Gone Bad. That's my favorite genre. And I always wonder if I could survive, if I was marooned on an island, you know, without anything but the necessities. And so I marooned myself on an island in the Marshall Islands, and just took a spear and a magnifying glass to start fires and a mask.
What kind of one percenter games are you playing?
So I want to... This is true, by the way. This is reported in a reputable newspaper. So what you did was you had yourself dropped off on this island. You brought no food. You brought a magnifying glass, as you said, to start fires.
Right.
A spear.
Yeah.
A spear.
To spear fish.
Of course, fish.
Yeah. As one does.
As one does. And what else? Did you have a sexy loincloth? What did you have?
No, I had a camera. I did take a tripod, and so I wanted to document this.
Right.
And spear a fish. I'd, you know, do a selfie with a fish. And
and he had a volleyball named Wilson. You know,
I didn't, but that was the what most people gravitate to as far as following this is I didn't have a volleyball. But by about the third day, I was a little bored, let's face it. And I was given a Sharpie pen before I left. These hermit crabs would wander through my camp endlessly.
Yeah.
And so by about the third day, I found that Sharpie pen, and I picked up a hermit crab and wrote number one on his shell and put him down and just to see if he would reoccur.
Yeah.
And number two a little later. And by the end of the week, I had 126 numbered.
And people say senators never accomplish anything. So you were just...
I still miss number 72.
He was cute.
How come we don't have a show yet called Senate Survive?
Yeah.
Well, I have been asked that. People say, well, why don't you just go on that show, Survivor?
Yeah.
I say, I go through enough elections. I don't want to be voted off an island. I want to actually survive.
Did you learn anything in your experience, in your week of privation and survival and isolation on an island, that helps you in your current career in the U.S. Senate?
Well, you know, there's the old poem, then song, No Man is an Island, and there is truth to that. One thing that I really came back with is the knowledge that there is a heck of a lot of beauty out there. We have a gorgeous earth here, and so much of it happens every sunset that I watch, seven of the most beautiful sunsets in the world. And were I not there to see it, they would have still occurred. And there's so much that is great that we just miss completely. When I got back, I tried to share these things, but it's meaningless unless you can share it with somebody.
You sure you're not
really
a Democrat?
Is.
Yeah, Republicans don't talk like this. What's going on?
Well, Senator Flake, we are delighted to have you with us, and we've asked you here today to play a game. This time we're calling...
Dude, that skijoring was sick.
As we enjoy the classic winter sports of slope style, half pipe, and the thing with the skiing and the shooting at the Winter Olympics in Sochi, let us remember that not all popular winter sports make it to the Olympics. We're going to ask you three questions about non-Olympic winter sports, which I'm sure you're up on, being from Arizona. Get two right, you'll win Carl's voice on your voicemail. Are you ready to play?
I'll do my best.
All right. Carl, who is Senator Flake of Arizona playing for?
The senator is playing for Cassidy Welch of Phoenix.
Not just a contestant, a potential vote.
It's a vote.
It's a vote.
Oh, man.
Your first sport is skijoring, which was played in the 1928 Winter Games. It's described by the Atlantic magazine as what? A, like figure skating, but with stabbing. B, like water skiing behind a dog. Or C, an unfortunate mix of striptease and ski jump.
What was that first one again?
The first one was like figure skating, but with stabbing.
I'm going with that.
All right. I think that would be a wonderful thing to see, but it was really water skiing behind a dog. That's how it was described. The way it works is you put on some skis, you take some dogs, you put some, leads on the dogs, you attach the leads to your chest, and then you throw some kibble out as far as you can ahead of the dogs, and you take off with the dogs. You're good to go. No longer a sport, sadly. But you have two more chances, so you can still win. Here we go. Okay, a sport called acroski was tried out as a demonstration sport at the 88 and 92 games, never made the official Olympics. What is acroski? A, competitive snow angel making. B, nicknamed the uphill slalom, competitors ride adjacent ski lifts, first one to the top wins. Or C, also known as ski ballet, it's artistic skiing on a gentle slope with costumes.
We're going with C.
You are right. They're right.
There we
it's known as ski ballet. Many experts say it didn't make the official Olympic program because of its extreme boringness. Okay, here is your last question. One sport that takes summer fun to the mountains has never gotten its Olympic due despite a growing fan base. What is it? A, snow kayaking, in which competitors paddle their way down slopes in a kayak. B, winter triathlon, which is a combination of biking, running, and hypothermia. Or C, snow skitball, which is just what it sounds like.
I'm going with the audience. A.
You're going to say, you're going to go with your constituents. Exercise their will.
I always go with
and
my
snake constituents. Kayaking. It is, in fact, snow kayaking. Very good, everybody. You can see videos of it. They use the paddle to steer down the slope. Carl, how did Senator Flake do on our quiz?
The senator had two correct answers, Peter, so he wins for Cassidy Welch.
Well done. Just now one more vote. Ladies and gentlemen, Senator Jeff Flake is the junior senator from Arizona.
Thank you
so much for being here, Senator Flake. A real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much. Your senator, ladies and gentlemen. Senator Flake.